Right.
So defenses are adjusting. And you know what defenses are finding out? Let's just blitz the hell out of this game, and maybe we'll get home. And right now they're having success playing man defense, cover one, sticky man coverage, as Baldy loves to say, and they're blitzing the hell out of these teams.
Kind?
You know, sticky man coverage.
Is there any other kind
there's
of man coverage?
There's man coverage in there. Sticky man coverage.
I want you to use that when discussing Jonathan Kuminga and Andrew Wiggins on opening night. Look at the sticky man coverage here, Chris Mullin.
Oh, you know what? I will. You know what? That's a great idea,
and
Shasky.
You better reference me.
No, I will not reference you. That's a great part about this. Sticky man. Well, you know, the snitches out there on Twitter, they'll make sure to credit you because they always love to make sure that I don't get all the shine. So, sticky man defense, individual defense, sticky. This is sticky man defense, Fezzy.
Look at him. Look at him slide his feet. Look at the lateral quickness. Sticky man.
All right, let's get Anthony Slater on.
Look at the flipping of the hips.
Anthony Slater's got sticky hair. You see the grease he puts in the hair, man? Boy, be shining.
Nobody
NBA
uses
TV.
Grease. It's like or grease or gel. I don't know. What does he use? Let's ask him.
Gel. He's got gel. Anyway, Anthony Slater.
Hairspray.
Live in Portland, courtesy of the River Islands guest line. All guests on any 570 game appear on the River Islands guest line. Is it time for you to discover the islands? Our great friends, River Islands and Lathrop, we got to go back out there. I need to dip in one of those pools out there in Lathrop right now with the way Niner fans are talking. Slater, what's happening, buddy?
It's conditioner, by the way.
Conditioner. Oh, leave-in conditioner?
Well, yeah. Yep.
I may need some of that, man. I got the curls going on. I need some leave-in stuff myself. Man, you got the good hair. Slates, man. What's up? New season. I mean, I know, obviously, you were in Hawaii, and I heard you were staying at a very, very nice hotel in Hawaii. So out there at training camp. So basketball season's been going off for you for about a month, but the official start of the regular season, man, I know you got some excitement, right? What year is this for you covering the beat?
12.
You're 12. You're 12.
Nine Warriors, but 12 if you include my three Thunder years, which I do. I don't know if y'all do it.
No, I mean, I think it's one of the greatest free agent signings in Bay Area sports history. Getting Anthony Slater to come from Oklahoma City to the Bay Area, it's a great, great addition for the Bay.
I appreciate that. How's the season going? I'm staring at like 45-degree foggy Portland as we're talking, so it's not quite as nice as Hawaii. You know what I wish on a day like today? I wish the NBA opened like baseball opens. Like, we should have a little like Cavs magic at 11 a.m. We should have, you know, a Pistons game at 2 p.m., something like that. There should be some daytime basketball.
Which is why the league should start on Christmas Day. I mean, but that's a whole other conversation. We don't need to discuss it this moment.
Like daytime
but
basketball.
Let's start with the headliner, because we never ask enough questions about this guy. How many more prime seasons do you think Steph Curry has today? Because what he did for Team USA, it might be one of the, you know, the great final acts, but I feel like he's got more for the Warriors, but for the national stage, like, how many more years does he have of that player?
We'll see. You know, if you had asked this question 4 years ago about LeBron, I might have been like, this is the last one. But, I mean, LeBron enters this season still considered a top 15-ish player, an all-NBA type guy. I'm pretty confident Steph Curry's an all-NBA player again this year. You know, it's that second team, third team, first team. That remains to be seen. But I think he's got at least a couple more seasons of that, maybe three. I mean, obviously, he just added an extra year. The Warriors kind of need it to be three more years because they're going to be paying him $60-plus million 3 seasons from now. But, you know, just considering his conditioning, how serious he takes the job, and then his prime skill, which is obviously shooting – I think he's still got a long runway of at least, like I said, like all NBA level basketball. But I will also say there's a big difference between third team all NBA Steph Curry and first team all NBA Steph Curry, right? Like, is he in the MVP conversation this year, or is he just like a very solid top player on a team? Like, that might be the difference between 44 wins and 53 wins.
Have you seen any slippage of Steph Curry? Just a little tick. Any off-the-ball movement stuff you noticed? Anything about off the dribble, maybe beating his man off the – because he's seeing now Steph Curry every night. He's going to see a 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", guy, long and athletic, and he's going to have to navigate through that. Has there been any signs? Because I don't think I've seen any signs yet, but maybe you have a better eye than me when it comes to this stuff. Have you seen any signs of slippage from Stephen Curry?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's slower than he used to be. Like, go watch those, like, unanimous MVP 2016, like, 2017 type seasons. Like, he's so fast, shifty, you know, getting up the court. There's a little bit more burst in a sense, but that he's kind of made up for that with like strength and you know, kind of smarts and some of his little tricks off the ball he's mastered. I mean, he's kind of mastered the sport in a lot of ways, or at least his style of it, which is kind of why they have to make unique rosters that, that fit how he has to play. But the big thing is, I mean, you even saw in the Olympics, like he's susceptible to like cold stretches, right? Like he was cold for the first six games of the Olympics, whatever it was. He needs to not have as big a burden this season as he did last season. But, I mean, as I'm sure you guys are about to talk about, like, the roster still kind of lends itself to believe he's going to have a pretty big offensive burden.
All right, so here's an interesting question. Not that Draymond isn't important, but given how you need others to step up and break through, if Draymond ends up being the second best player on the Warriors this year, is that a good thing or a bad thing for the overall team?
I think it's a good thing in the sense of obviously, like, kind of depends on what type of argument you're making. But if your argument is just like, look how good he still is defensively, hey, they have the second ranked defense in the league like they did during that 2022 title season, like, Draymond was at the heart of that. He was, a lot of people voted him defensive player of the year that year. I think he finished top three. If he is still that, if you can still make the argument, hey, he's the second best Warrior because look at how ferocious he is on the defensive end and look how he ties everything together and they are winning because they're a top five defense, which, by the way, that's how they say they have to win this season, is being at least a top 10 defense, then you can make the argument he's the second best player. Now, I think the point you're making is like somebody's got to emerge, and we're really probably talking about Jonathan Kuminga here, is like a second best scorer, like if they had a second all-star this year, it's somebody a little bit more out of nowhere who's at least statistically, you could make the argument, hey, look, Kuminga's 21 per game on, you know, a pretty good volume at pretty good efficiency. That's fine. But I could still see them having a good season and Draymond being considered the second best player because the defensive end of the floor matters and they need him to be like, you know, look like a defensive player of the year candidate.
Anthony Slater here on the River Islands guest line on the Morning Rush on 95.7 Game. Speaking of Draymond Green, because we've heard Steve Kerr mention he wants his team to let it fly from the three-point line. Wiggins taking 5, 6, 7 threes. Kuminga catch and shoot threes. And they got up a lot of threes in the preseason. There's no doubt about that. Where does Draymond Green factor into that equation? Because shots will present itself. And I always thought, man, if Draymond took 5 threes a game, made 2 to 3 of them a game, it may make the defense shift their game plan, or maybe not because you still have Stephen Curry. But where does Draymond Green fall along with the offensive philosophy here moving forward?
I don't think they're going to be rushing out to contest the Draymond 3, even if he hits a couple.
Yeah.
He shot it well last year. I don't know if you got the stats up. What did he finish last year?
I think 38%. It was like 38%. You know, I had that crazy stat. When he makes 2 threes, the Warriors win like 75-78% of the time.
Yeah, I kind of like how he played offense last year. Yeah. I kind of like how he played last year when he was on the court, right? Yeah. That's a big question for him this year. But, like, to your point, like, he's going to get a couple up per game. You know, particularly, I feel like those first quarter ones, right? You know, it's a little bit game plan. Like, he's got to show them, hey, I'll take it. Kind of like what you're mentioning. Like, and he seems confident right now to at least get him up. And if he's in the mid-30s, which, like, he was last year, that's enough. But, like, the volume's coming elsewhere. The volume's Kuminga. The volume's Buddy Hield coming off the bench, who I thought shot it really well in the preseason. The Podziemski, Wiggins, obviously Steph's going to get him up. Like, the volume is elsewhere on this roster. But, sure, Draymond's going to take a couple. Draymond has to be confident offensively. I mean, obviously, this is a conversation we've been having for, 5 seasons now. Yeah. But I feel decent about him entering the season offensively and defensively. It's just, again, stay on the floor.
Shasky, 39.5% from three last year for Draymond Green. 39.5%.
I like the top of the key ones, not the corner of the three. So I'm hoping he can move out from the corner. I don't think that's his best shot. If he can improve the corner, I would love that. I think that would make him more deadly. But getting back to Jonathan Kuminga, Anthony, there's so many elements to the Kuminga season. Obviously, how important he is. What position is he? How much does he value himself financially? Like how the Warriors haven't given him the deal that they did in years past to like a Jordan Poole. And then I'm looking at like teams with projected cap space moving forward. Like Charlotte has $47 million in projected cap space, but only, you know, 4 other teams in the league. And they're all bottom feeders that aren't good. And they only have about $25 million each, give or take. Break down this whole Kuminga finance situation right now, because I know that he wants to make a certain amount. The Warriors can pay him probably, you know, match anything that's out there. Like, how does this shake down this year with Jonathan Kuminga financially and for the Warriors? Can they get the best out of him?
So So, I mean, he's got a lot of incentive, obviously financial incentive, to have a good season. Because what he has is that he has flashed some real skill and upside. He has a belief and I think has shown enough that you can see, hey, look, this guy could become a pretty high-scoring 6'8" wing that would be highly valued in the league. But he does not have the track record of, for example, Franz Wagner, the guy picked one behind him, Scotty Barnes, who got the max contract, Cade Cunningham, who got the max contract. He wants to get to that level. Those are all his peers in his draft class, which if you go back to pre-draft, like, that was the ballpark he was considered in, right? I mean, he was being talked about as a top three pick. So to get paid at that level, he's going to have a really big season, and particularly a scoring season. And, you know, the Warriors do need that. And I think they're clearing the way in a lot of ways for him to have that. He's going to start tonight from what I've heard. And I think he's going to, you know, be given the runway. Like, they're obviously going to let him take a lot of threes. I think he's going to take a decent amount of mid-rangers, maybe more than everybody's going to like, but I think he's going to. And then if they get him out there in the proper lineups with the right spacing, he should dunk plenty. He set a franchise record in dunks last year. So I think the stats are going to be good as far as, you know, what that translates into next year in restricted free agency. Or even at the deadline, because he didn't sign an extension, he remains very tradable in a sense come February, because he's, you know, on an expiring, you know, $7 million deal that's very easy to match. If there's a team out there that wants to commit to him as a major piece long term, I think Brooklyn is a team I would kind of highlight as they're kind of clearing the decks. They're in the really early stages of a rebuild. He, you know, spent some of his life in that area. I think that's a franchise that could be a suitor for him potentially. So we'll see. He's just got to have a big year, and the Warriors need him to have a big year, and he needs to have a big year.
No, Don Anthony Slater here on the River Islands Guest Line, live from Portland on 95.7 The Game Insider, and of course The Athletic's best beat writer out there, covered the Golden State Warriors. And you had a story the other day about Mike Dunleavy and what he's done as a GM so far as he enters his second season as a general manager at the Golden State Warriors, and it was about the trades that didn't go down. Obviously, they were big game hunting, big name hunting with Lowry marketed and, of course, Paul George. But it didn't go down. And that was their plan A and plan B to try to get both of those guys. But I think Dunleavy so far, it seems like, from what I read, Slater, that does have the respect from not only the core players, but ownership as well, to kind of do what he does and build the roster to his liking here. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, Bonte, you're around. Like, you know, there's not many people who have anything, you know, bad to say about Mike Dunleavy. I think generally the feeling in that building is he's sharp. He will make the decisions that need to be made, including, like, you know, kind of like the Klay Thompson departure this summer. You know, they kind of navigated that tricky landscape, and like you're not hearing like grumbling from Steph or Draymond about how that went down. I think the biggest thing, and one of the things I really tried to convey in that story, which you mentioned, is despite maybe some angst fan base wise, there isn't from the stars. Steph Curry is not, you know, upset about how this summer went down and what was or wasn't done. He was very much in on the conversations. He's communicative with Mike Dunleavy. There's some frustration that the Paul George thing didn't go down, as they voiced in that. But it's more frustration aimed at the Clippers than, you know, upstairs in their own franchise. And because the George thing didn't go down, they didn't feel it was worth it to send everything for Lauri Markkanen, because they just didn't feel like that would be a title contender. And you're not going all in for a non-title contender. It was, you know, that's their calculus, whether you agree with it or not. They like the pivot. I mean, this team, particularly the stars, they really like De'Anthony Melton and how the team looks. And then there's a belief and an understanding from Steph Curry that, like, you know, if something presents itself, come deadline, come next offseason, he'll be in the loop on it, and they'll pull the trigger if they feel like, you know, it's worth it. And as far as Dunleavy goes, like Steph is of the belief that he will get something like that done if it's available.
Second-year leap, Trayce Jackson-Davis, Brandon Pajemski. These guys had really great – I mean, just like legitimately great rookie seasons from both guys. What is the next step for those guys? Like, how do they really put their mark on winning with this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think Pajemski, like, that's what he does is help win, right? I mean, that's what he was last year, the plus-minus king, the leading charge taker, the, you know, like, the rebounder. He was like, I think he led the team in total rebounds. Like, the question for him next up is as a scorer, you know, like, what does he shoot from three from a volume perspective this year and from a percentage perspective? Can he, at various times, particularly with Steph off the floor, like, can he go get you a bucket? Or is it, you know, is his size and inability to finish in traffic, like, is that still just too much of a problem to, for him to take that kind of next tier leap? Is he just a high-end role player? Can he become more than that? I think we'll start to get those answers this season. But to your point, like, and that's why, this is why Steve Kerr loves him, but like, he already impacts winning. We know that. Like, yep. The track record last season proved that. As far as Trace Jackson Davis goes, look, they need rim protection. They need a lob threat out of the center spot. He showed flashes of it last year. He's just got to scale it up more this year. They really are hammering him on run the floor. If he just, like, every time, like, they want to be a really fast team. They're telling him and Kuminga this, but I know when Trace is on the floor, like, they remember what they used to want Wiseman to do. You can even say what JaVale McGee did for them. Remember when they played JaVale McGee for 4 minutes, and he had, you know, he would take a puff of his asthma inhaler right before he entered the game, and then he would just sprint up and down the floor for 4 minutes, and then they're like, all right, that's enough. That's kind of what they want out of Trace Jackson Davis. Just like, go cause trouble with your speed and kind of bouncy athleticism and finishing for 5 minutes, and then got off the floor, and they'll go small. Maybe they'll play some Looney. He doesn't have to play a monster role. Maybe he starts at center, maybe he doesn't. 20 minutes on some nights, 28 minutes on other nights. But, I mean, you mentioned it at the start of your question, and we were talking about Mike Dunleavy. Part of the belief in Mike Dunleavy and that front office is he's had one draft. I mean, at this point he's had two, but, I mean, Quentin Post, we'll see. But his first draft was Pajemski at 19 and Trace Jackson Davis in the 50s. Like, those were hits. Yep. Like, so, I mean, he's already kind of proven himself in that sense.
You brought up Looney, and he's kind of the forgotten man. And, you know, there's some say maybe he was out of shape last season. Well, he's transformed his body, Anthony. He looks like a completely different dude. Where is he at right now in the pecking order? Obviously, he's going to play alongside Trace Jackson Davis. Wouldn't surprise me if he started a lot of games this season. But he's also playing for a contract, so another big season for Kevon Looney as well.
Yeah, he's like shooting a little mid-range with some confidence right now. It's still when he pulls it up, you're like, is he really going to take that? But yeah, I mean, he looks good. I mean, but again, like, you know, the two or three guys that you would think should play tonight are not going to. And Looney might be one of those, you know.
Even against DeAndre Ayton?
Do you think they're fearing the DeAndre Ayton? Like, that's how they have to restructure their rotation tonight to deal with DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, man, he's going to have 20 and 2 tonight.
Okay, I think they're okay if Draymond's guarding DeAndre Ayton in crunch time, let me tell you. Yeah, I mean, maybe again, like, I could see Steve actually playing like 11 guys tonight, you know, right. Looney gets 8 minutes, right? You know, maybe like a little 4 minute stint, just cause like Steve still seems to be wrestling over the idea of like, he has to not play somebody, not play a few guys. But I think Looney's old reliable. I do think he looks better. He obviously came into camp in better shape. He's going to take a few of those jumpers and like, he could have a decent season, but I also think, if everybody's healthy, he's kind of on the back end of this really congested rotation.
Does Moody, is he guaranteed minutes despite signing a contract extension, 3 years, $39 million? Good deal for him. Good deal for the Golden State Warriors, team friendly. But
you will never hear me say he's guaranteed minutes.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. I'm asking because the fan base, you know, it's always that player with the fan base. Why is it this guy playing? And it feels like Moses Moody's that guy this year, and I like Moses Moody. But to me, when he signed the contract extension, everybody said, oh, yeah, they're going to play. I don't think he's guaranteed anything.
Before you answer that, Anthony, I just did the math a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, all right, look, so if there's 96 total minutes at the 2 and 3 spots, okay, and if you're going to play Wiggins and Kuminga at two of those spots for, let's say, 30 minutes a pop, right, that leaves you about 36 to 40 minutes for Buddy Hield, Moses Moody, DeAndre Melton, GP2, maybe Pods, maybe Lindy Waters. Like, it is a numbers crunch. Someone's going to get left out every night.
Lindy Waters has eked himself into this conversation, Shasky. I like it.
Oklahoma. Am I wrong?
Well, Steve Kerr said yesterday that Gee Santos and Lindy Waters are not going to be part of the rotation to start.
Yeah, he's not, but I actually do like Lindy Waters.
I like
him too. I do too.
Conversation for another day. Yeah, I mean, you're like, I think you can open up that positionally to the four. I mean, a lot of those guys are going to mix in at the four. Kuminga is going to play plenty of four. Wiggins will play some four. I can see Moody in certain lineups, like, theoretically being like a stretch four. They've got to play Draymond at center more than they probably want to, and certainly more than Draymond wants to. But that's just how this team, you know, the lineups make sense. I think Moody's going to get a crack because I think he's earned it. Because, look, if Steve Kerr goes into camp saying, this is the competition, it's open, and that Moses Moody is one of their top five players in the preseason, and was they were raving about him during practices in Hawaii. Like, don't you have, like, if it was a competition and he theoretically kind of won the competition, in a sense, he's got to get a shot. But we all know Moses Moody's gotten 25 shots over various points over the last 3 years, and including, by the way, he always shows up in the playoffs. He always just randomly enters the rotation in the playoffs. And then Steve Kerr comes out post games like, look, I got to play him. He's got to be a rotation guy. And then he's out of the rotation 2 weeks later. So to answer your question, I do think he plays tonight. I do think he, like, sees the floor. I don't think he gets a DMP tonight. But that doesn't mean he won't 3 games from now. That doesn't, like, I think there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching. And, you know, the thing that will help this team, it'll hurt them, but it'll help them, is, like, you know, there's going to be a sprained ankle here, a strained hamstring there. We'll probably clear the way for some guys.
Oh, boy. Warrior season is back. The fandom's back. The calm before the storm. Warriors open up the season in Portland to take on the Portland Trail Blazers. Should be a lot of fun. Slater, you're always good to us, man. We look forward to reading your latest stuff.
See you, buddy.
And have fun up there in Portland and Salt Lake City, and then we'll see you Sunday at Chase Center.
Three worst teams in the West, I think, is who they get out of the gate. Portland, Utah, Clippers.
It's not bad. Can you go 3-0? 3-0?
Yeah, but if it's not, if it's 1-2 or something.
So if they start 3-0, we talk championship. If they start 1-2, we talk blow it up. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know, because them Pelicans might come in next week and go sweep on that two-gamer. And y'all can get back to the Niner talk, because I know it's straight panic mode.
Hey, Slater, man. I was pulling for your guardage. I really was.
I mean,
we were texting, man. Juan Soto's just wonderful, man. That's it. That's all.
Like you said, maybe your Shane Bieber was there, but we'll talk next year.
Slater. Have a good one, buddy.
See you, pal.
All right. Anthony Slater here at the River Islands Guest Line, as you are listening to 95.70 KGMC FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app. You're telling me if they don't start 3-0.
No, it's not.
They don't blow people out.
15 games over 500.
Deep playoff run? We're talking deep playoff runs?
No. I'm not doing that this year. I made a promise to myself. You can, and it could be, because, you know, it could be Bonte Hill says, not Joe Shasky. Joe Shasky is not going to lose his mind until we get to 15 games over 500. I might suspect.